All right, Rabosai, good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. Okay, let us begin. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning share. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Tammuz, Rabbi Naftali Tilson, for Meretz Yisrael, for dedicating all of his Shimon Drashos this month in commemoration of the yard sites of his parents, Rabbi Yonah ben Avram Leib and Rivka Bas Yaakov. We thank our Week of Learning sponsors, Jacob and Julie Blumenfeld, Eli Nishmas, Jacob's grandmother, Henna Bas Mordechai, and our Daf Yomi sponsors for today, Alan and Sue Meyerowitz, in memory of Solomon Meyerowitz, Shlomo Ben Avram HaKohen, Zichrono Levracha, and Tali and Michelle Strum, in honor of the birth of their granddaughter, just a little while ago, to their children, Ori and Ariel. We hope that in Meretz Hashem, the merit of the Talmud Torah, this little girl will grow up to be an incredible Akara Sabayis and Im HaBanim Smecha. She should be Zocha Meretz Hashem to enter into Torah Techupa to Maisim Tovim, be a source of Nachas for her parents, Admev Esim Shanim Tovos. Also, with that, let us begin. A lot to do today, Baruch Hashem. So today's daf is Nun Aleph 51. We are picking up in Meretz Hashem on Nun Amud Beis 50b, and we are picking up at the two dots. Just to make sure, 1 second, I'm sorry. Good. At the two dots. So we'll say, so the Mishnah, so the Gemara quotes in the Mishnah. So again, it's about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, about 12 lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara says as follows. We cannot go ahead and extract for the consumption of produce. Now, what's the case over here? So we'll say, if you, so don't turn back, but I'll just quote to you. So the Mishnah quoted this case. We'll say, here's the following situation. If you can imagine the following scenario. Reuven sells Shimon a field. Reuven sells Shimon a field. Only problem is, the field is stolen. Right? Reuven stole the field, so he sells Shimon a stolen field. What ends up happening? The true owner of the field comes and takes the field back from Shimon. Shabbos says, so now obviously Shimon is out, right? Shimon had no idea that he bought stolen property. So what's the halacha? For the actual cost of the field, for the actual cost of the field itself, so Reuven has the ability to collect from, Shimon. Shimon has the ability to collect from Reuven's nechasim mishubadim, which means, Rabbi says, so again, it's not a complicated case, it's just many moving pieces. So again, step one, Reuven sells Shimon a field. Turns out, field is stolen, okay? So then what happens? True owner of the field comes and takes it back from Shimon. Okay, now we'll say, the shaila is, what recourse does Shimon have? So the truth is, Shimon's recourse is really divided up into two parts. For the cost of the field itself, that Shimon could go ahead and seize Reuven's nechasim mishubadim. So let's say, for example, Reuven had other fields that he sold in the interim as well. So Shimon has the ability to just go ahead and seize other fields that Reuven sold in satisfaction of the debt that Reuven now owes Shimon. That's for the actual purchase price of the karka itself. But let's say during the time that Shimon had the karka, Shimon made improvements, right? He went ahead and he worked the soil, or for that matter, again, produce grew on the field itself. So I will say, the Mishnah says, for those types of improvements, so ultimately Shimon does not have the ability to seize nechasim mishubadim. He does not have the ability to go after other people whom Reuven sold property to. He could only collect from nechasim b'nei chorin, i.e. assets still currently owned by Reuven himself. That's the basic halacha. So says the Gemara, my time, why? Why is that? So the Gemara says, Amr Ula, Amr Eish Lagash, Levi Shein Ksuvin, Kazolti, so we'll say, here's the difference. We'll say, see, this is actually quite interesting. Whenever you buy property, right? What's the first thing you do when you buy property?
Title search,
right? That, I just want to point out, That seems to be like as old as real estate transactions are. In other words, you buy property, you recognize it. When Shimon buys property from Reuven, he understands that Reuven may have engaged in a whole bunch of other transactions. As such, the property that Shimon is buying from Reuven ultimately may be encumbered. So what do you do? You do a search for all the different things that Reuven has going on. The boss says, here's what's interesting. The cost of the property itself. So in other words, when Shimon buys the property from Reuven, so he bought it for $50,000. So that amount is recorded in the shtar. So therefore, any other purchaser of property from Reuven knows that Reuven has a property that he sold to Shimon for $50,000. And there's always the possibility that should something go south on the transaction between Reuven and Shimon, Shimon may be coming after other purchasers in order to recapture his loss. So that is true when it comes to the actual price of the property itself. What is it not true regarding? Peros or capital improvements on the land. I say capital improvements on the land. Those things are not recorded. So because they're not recorded, Siyabo say, so therefore, when you buy property from someone, you remain ready, you accept the fact that there may be other liens against this piece of property, and you stand ready to go ahead and defend that. But it could only be true with things that you know about. So property sales, which are recorded in a document, you know about. Shevach, improvements to the land, or peros, you don't know about. So because they're not written in the document, therefore again, Shimon, when the property is taken back by the original owner, cannot go and seize from other purchasers from Reuven. Incredible. Amar Rabbi Abba Ula, v'hamazon isha v'abanos. What about the case? We'll say, mazon isha v'abanos. So this is the halacha that says that a man is obligated to go ahead and the estate, or the right, is obligated to sustain the wife and the daughters. The kimandik sividamu, those are as if they are written obligations. Vekatani emosian, yet the both say in those obligations, one is not obligated to go ahead and seize, or one is not permitted to seize from purchasers. Amarle hasam me karahachi iskin. So we'll say ultimately that's how that halacha is structured from the beginning. The Gemara says ksuvin hein etzel benichorin ben ksuvin hein etzel meshubadin. So we'll say an interesting halacha over here. The Gemara says it's different because there's an obligation of the estate to go ahead and sustain the widow and sustain the daughters. So the Gemara says that is like a written obligation. Yet you are not allowed to extract those funds from properties seized by the deceased husband. Yet, those are written. It's different, the Gemara says, because that's how they're originally constituted. Those obligations are originally constituted to say you could only collect from Nechasa ben Echorin, not Nechasa Meshubadim. Nechain Amar Rabbi Yassi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Levishen Ksuvin. So we'll say Rabbi Yassi, Rabbi Yochanan, say the same thing. Why can't you collect for peros, and why can't you collect ultimately again for improvements from the land from the chasim mishubadim? Ultimately again, because they're not written in a document. Amar le Rabbi Zera, the Rav Asi. So I'll say the same conversation. V'hamazon ha'isha v'abanos tikaman d'ksivi damu v'katani ein motzien. Aye, but there's the obligation that the estate has to sustain the wife, to sustain the daughters. That is the equivalent of a written obligation, and yet you could only collect from Nechasim ben Echorin, not Nechasim Meshubadin. Amrle Meikara, Hachi Askun Ksuvin Hein Eitzel ben Echorin, Ve'in Ksuvin Eitzel Meshubadin. That's the way they're constituted, Rabbi Osai, that again, the halacha, the obligation to sustain the wife, to sustain the daughters, only comes from unencumbered properties, not from sole properties. So Rabbi Osai, let's just pause here, just to review what we have. The Mishnah introduces us to the following concept. So again, Rabbi Osai, we're talking about a very specific case of Reuven sold a piece of property to Shimon. Okay? Fine, no problem over here. Only one little minor wrinkle in the transaction, which is the property is stolen. Property is stolen. What ends up happening? True owner of the property comes and takes it back from Shimon. Who does Shimon have a claim now against? Who does he have a claim against? Reuven. Right? Because after all, again, he paid Reuven $50,000 for a parcel of property, and now again, he's out of property. I will say, now the truth is, remember, Shimon really has, his claim has two parts. What are the two parts to his claim? Part one, purchase price. Purchase price. Part two, is produce or improvements. What the Mishnah introduces us to is, those two claims are dealt with in two different ways. The purchase price could actually be recaptured by Nechasim Meshubadim. What does that mean, Abba Osai? So again, let's say for argument's sake, Reuven went ahead and sold the property to Shimon on the 1st of Tammuz. On the 1st of Tammuz, okay? Let's say then on the 5th of Tammuz, Reuven sold other properties. Now, on the 17th of Tammuz, so the true owner of the property takes the property back from Shimon. So now Shimon goes back to Reuven. Reuven says, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, you know, now that you mentioned it, it was stolen. I forgot about that. Right? So now what happens? And Reuven says, I'd love to help you out. I have no money and I have no property. I sold everything and everything is in the market, right? So we'll say, so now Shimon has the ability to go to other purchasers who Reuven sold to after his transaction, right? So remember again, and Reuven and Shimon has the ability to recapture $50,000 from properties sold by Reuven after the first of Tammuz, okay? But that's only for the purchase price. Why? I will say, why for the purchase price? Because again, because Ula wants to suggest purchase price is recorded in a document. There's a document of sale. Which we'll say, what that does is, that because it's recorded in a document, any subsequent purchaser of property from Reuven knows about that transaction. And because they know about that transaction, they also are on warning that maybe should something go south with Reuven's transaction with Shimon, Shimon may be coming after me. As opposed to peros, right, produce and improvements. So again, Ula wants to suggest that's not written, that's not recorded anywhere. Because it's not recorded anywhere, it's unfair to make any subsequent purchasers responsible for that. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, Shimon could only go ahead and recapture for peros and for improvements from where? What we call nechasim and nechorin, assets owned directly by Reuven himself. It's very logical. Very logical. That's Ula. Rabbi Hanina says, Levishen Ktsuvin. It's not a function of them being written, but rather it's a function of them being defined. Ktsuvin means, Ktsuv literally means measured, defined. In other words, a purchase price, Abosai, is a defined amount. Peros, right? Improvements, undefined. So the Gemara says, Ibayluhu, Rabbi Hanina Ktsuvin Uksuvin Bai, does Rabbi Hanina require, in order to collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, does Rabbi Hanina require for it to be both Ktsuvin, right? Defined. And ksuvin and written, top of Nun Aleph, Ol Dilma, we'll say top of 51a. Ol Dilma, ksuvin, the afapi shein ksuvin. Or maybe is it enough for it to be defined, right? Defined amount, even if it's not recorded. It's a good kasha. So Tashma, di itmar, mi shemes v'niach shtei banos. We'll say, very interesting case here. So we'll say, I just want to point out, this is absolutely fascinating, just in terms of seeing Talmudic real estate law. And I will say, again, anyway. Somewhere says as follows. Tashma, the Itmar. Second line down from the top, Nuna from the base. Mi shemeis v'niach shtei banos. So we'll say, watch this. Reuven died. Reuven's very busy this morning. Right? So right, he sold property, he died. Right? It's going to be tchias amazim just a little bit. So don't get too upset. So we'll say, so what happens? So Reuven died. He left behind two daughters. Right? V'chei oben. And a son. And I will say, fine. So now, in this moment right now, what's going to be the status of Reuven's estate? He left behind two daughters and a son. What's the halacha? Son inherits. Now remember again, we saw this back in our Ksuvas days. There is a halacha that says that even though a daughter doesn't inherit when there is a son, a daughter will take 1/10 of the estate as her dowry. That's the halacha. 1/10 of her estate as her dowry. So in this case over here, Reuven dies, leaves behind three kids, two daughters and a son. So the son is going to be the sole inheritor. So what happens? So Gemara says, the kav maharishon of anatla isra nechasim. So daughter number one takes her 1/10 for a dowry. Now what happens? V'lo hispika shnia ligbos ad shemes haben. Daughter number two, before she got a chance to take her 10%, what happens? Son dies. Now both say, here's what's interesting. What happens when the son dies? What happens when the son dies? So now daughters become the inheritors. This week's parasha, but no slavchad, right? So daughters become the inheritors. Okay, now we'll see. Now here's what's interesting, right? What's intriguing about this? So son died before daughter number two got to take her 10th. Now if you're daughter number two, right, what's your claim? Let me take my 10th before we divide the estate, right? That's only fair. Let me take my 1/10 out as my dowry amount. Right, daughter number one, you took your 10th. Right, let me take my 10th, and now let's divide the estate. So what's the halacha? On Rabbi Yochanan, Shnia Vitra. Rabbi Yochanan says, the second one has effectively given up her right. She's given up her right. Look at Rashi. Shnia Vitra. Ibda Isur Nechasim Shela. She has lost her ability to collect 1/10. V'lo Aminan Tigbi Isur Nechasim Bereisha. Vashayach loku b'shava. We don't say let her take her tenth and then divide up the rest of the estate. Why? The time of the takinu isur nechasim k'deshetei libanos parnasa nisun va'iketvei. We'll say, what was the whole point? Why did Chazal institute the one-tenth of the estate? Why did they institute that? So that a daughter should have something. Daughter should have something. Rabbi say, again, do you need that takana in this case? No. Why? She has. She has. She, right? She's now an inheritor. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says she has effectively given up her one-tenth. Rabbi Rechanina, Gedolim Yizu Amru. The truth is, Chazal said even stronger than this. Motzien leparnasa, ve'ein motzien lemizonos. So I'll say, ultimately, again, look at Rashi. Gedolim Yizu Amru, shafilu machar ha'achas ha'nechasim. We'll say even more than this. Right? Chazal says, what did Chazal say? We'll say, let's say in this case, Reuven died, left behind a son and two daughters. Let's say Reuven then decided to go ahead and sell the estate. So what's the halacha, Rabosai? Motzin leparnosa. We extract from the purchaser's property in order to provide for the ongoing sustenance, the parnosa of the daughters, ve'ein motzin lemezonos. But ultimately, again, we will not go ahead and take back from the purchasers from Mizonos. We'll say Mizonos ultimately refers to the support of the wife. So we'll go ahead and we'll extract from the purchasers for the daughters, but not necessarily for the wife. Va'at Amrit Shnia Vitra. And ultimately, again, you're saying that the second one has given up her right. So the Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says, I don't understand why ultimately, again, if we say so strong that even if the brother sold the estate, that we would extract property in order to go ahead and sustain the daughters, then in a case where the property belongs to the daughters, why would she not be permitted to take her tenth before the estate distribution or division? Take a look at Rashi. Va'at amrit sheni vitra mipnei shlo espika, because she did not take her tenth before the brother died. V'alo b'shibut shalachirim shigidolim izo lo amru shetafsid va'achshav shem b'faninu tafsid. So we'll say, so what the Gemara is asking, just saying, but before we get to why this is relevant for us, the Gemara is asking, I don't understand. So you're telling me that sister number two, or daughter number two, doesn't get to take her tenth before they divide up the estate, but that doesn't make any sense. Because we'll say, let's say a more extreme case, where let's say the brother sold the estate. The brother sold the estate, right? We would extract from purchasers in order to give the daughter parnasa. That's how strong her claim is. So if we would extract from others to give her parnasa, so certainly in a case where now there are no purchasers, the estate is in their possession, should she not be entitled to take her one-tenth before they divide up the estate equally? Now finish up that Rashi. Rashi says over here, Al Moshamino Rabbi Chanina, Kitsuvin Tarfim Mishibadi, Afa Pi She'in Ksuvin Kigon Zun. Now remember, the point is that we're taking from this is, what do you see from here? That when you have a defined amount, for example, like Parnosa, you are able to go ahead and extract that from purchasers, even though what? Even though it's not written in a shtar. Now, boss, remember again, what are we trying to figure out over here? Rabbi Chanina said that the reason we could collect the purchase price from the Chasim Mishubadim is because it's katsov, it's defined, as opposed to peros, produce, and improvements, which is not defined, can only be collected but from the Chasim B'nei Chorin and not the Chasim Mishubadim. But what you see from here is, according to Rabbi Chanina, all it needs to be is be defined, even if it's not recorded in a document. To which the Gemara says, "Parnasa demekas kaitza." Parnasa is an amount that is defined. Michtav lo ksiva, but it is not written in a document. The kamotzia, and yet we see we extract it. So we see that according to here from Michanina, that as long as you have an amount that is defined, even if it is not recorded in a document, it can be extracted from nechasim mishubadim. To which the Gemara says, no. Shiny parnasa kevan de isleikala kimandik siva dami. We'll say parnasa is different. Since everyone knows that daughters are entitled to parnasa from the estate, it has a call, right? It's known. Because it's known, ultimately, again, it's as if it is written in the shtar. Incredible. Okay, Masib Rafuna Bar Manoach. So therefore, again, so just to point out where we are right now. Everyone is agreeing with the principle in the Mishnah. What's the principle in the Mishnah? So once again, when the true owner of the property seizes it from Shimon, Shimon goes back to Reuven. Shimon has two claims against Reuven. What are his two claims? Claim number one. Purchase price. Claim number two, produce and improvements, to which the Mishnah explains those two claims are collected from two different sources. Purchase price is collected from where? From where? Even nechasim mishubadim, even sold properties, right? Peros and improvements collected from where? Only nechasim b'nei chorin, unencumbered properties. We're trying to figure out why. Why? All right, why is that so? So we have Ulo who says it's because peros and improvements are not written in a document, as opposed to a purchase price, which is written in a document. Rabbi Hanina says the difference is purchase price is defined, peros and improvements are not defined. That's our machlokes. To which the Gemara says, good. Masir Rav Huna Bar Noach. Rav Huna Bar Noach asked the kasha on Ulo. Mesu b'nosei nizonos minichazim minichorin v'hin nizonos minichazim mishubadim. So I'll say this is a fascinating case. Okay, imagine the following scenario. Reuven is married to Rachel, right? Second marriage. So now Rachel comes in with a daughter. So Reuven agrees to go ahead and support Rachel's daughter for 5 years. Right? That's the commitment he makes. Okay. Reuven dies. Now what happens? He dies. They get divorced even, right? It could be they just get divorced. But they die. So we'll say, so what happens? So now Rachel gets remarried. Actually, if you take a look at Rashi. Rashi says it over here. Meisu b'nosei nizonos hanosei ase isho paska ima lazon es bita chamish shanim. Reuven marries Rachel, and he agrees to support her daughter for 5 years. Vigirsha, he divorces her, besoch chamish shanim, within 5 years. So two years in, Reuven and Rachel get divorced. Now remember again, despite the fact that Reuven divorced Rachel, what does he still have an obligation to do? To support her daughter, because he made that commitment. V'niseis la'achar, Rachel now marries Shimon. Okay? Upaska imokein. And by the way, Shimon made the same commitment to support Rachel's daughter. So we'll say, what's ta locha? So kimokein, chayiv lozono chamesh shanim, echa zana ve'echa nosa dmei mizonos. So we'll say, so now obviously, she doesn't need double mizonos. So we'll say, so what do you do during the overlap years? So during the overlap years, so remember again, you have a point in time where both Reuven and Shimon are obligated to support Rachel's daughter. So the halacha is one gives her mizonos and one gives her money. Now we'll say, let's complicate a little bit more. Mesu, so we'll say, what happens now if during the overlap time, both Reuven and Shimon die, right? But also, they have a lot of stress going on, right? Right. So both Reuven and Shimon die. So what's the halacha? I'll say this is incredible. Benosein. Now let's say Reuven and Shimon have their own daughters, right? So benosein nizonos minichasim benichorin. Ultimately, again, Reuven and Shimon's own daughters are supported from unencumbered property. But ultimately, again, Rachel's daughter, whom they are both obligated to support, is supported even from the chasim mishubadim. She could even extract property. Why? Gemara says, "Bipnei she kabalas chov." Ultimately, it was because she is like a creditor. Remember again, their own daughters have a right to support, but they're not creditors. Rachel's daughter, who they voluntarily obligated to support, is like a creditor, and therefore could even extract from the chasim mishubadim. So we'll say, see now, why is this a kasha? So Rashi says, Alma kaven dekaitzi chamishanim. So we'll say, this is a case of undefined amount, right? In other words, it's not written in a document, but it is defined. So we'll say, so this is a kasha. So this makes sense for Rabbi Hanina, is a kasha on Ula. To which the Gemara says, how come I ask? What's the case over here? Bishakano miyado. No, they made a kinyan. So in other words, both Reuven and Shimon made a kinyan, ultimately, again, to support Rachel's daughter. And I will say, whenever you have a kinyan is tantamount to a written agreement. Iachi banos nami. So I will say, if that's the case, then why wouldn't we say that they made a kinyan? Ultimately, again, with the daughters as well. Now the case is b'shekarnalazu v'lo karnalazu. So ultimately, again, Reuven and Shimon made a kinyan to support Rachel's daughter, but did not make a kinyan to support their own daughters. To which the Gemara says, "My paska, I don't understand why would you make that distinction. It's very simple. Bas ishto dehave bishas kinyan mahani le kinyan. Because Rabbi said, you remember, Rachel came into the marriage with this daughter. So her daughter, who is present at the time of the kinyan makes it a binding obligation. It is as if it is written in the document. Bito, the lo havi bishas kinyan, but one's own daughter, whose obligation to support begins at her birth, so to speak, who's not there at the time of the kinyan, ultimately, again, kinyan will not affect, will not help for her. Milo askinan, dahavu tarvaya bishas kinyan. Why can't you make it? Why can't you set it up as a case where both daughters are present at the time of the kinyan? The hechidami, what's the case? The girsha va'ahadra. Maybe Rabbi will say the case is where Reuven and Shimon were married to the mothers of their daughters, which makes sense, right? Then they divorced them, then they remarried them. Elabito de bitnai bezin ka'achla, lo mahani lakinyan. Rabbi will say this is incredible. So one's daughter, Rabbi will say, remember again, upon the death of the father, a daughter is entitled to support. Why is she entitled to support? That's not a biblical obligation. Where does that come from? That's a tenai bezin. In other words, a rabbinic enactment. So I will say something that is a rabbinic enactment, ultimately, again, a tenai is not going to help. I'm sorry. These obligation to support the daughter, which is a tenai bezin, a rabbinic enactment, ultimately, again, lo mahani lekinyan. A kinyan is not going to help to make it like a creditor. Bas ishto delab b'tnai bezin ka'achla, mahani lekinyan. I will say, but one's wife's daughter, who one is, in other words, not your own daughter, but your wife's daughter, who one is not obligated to support, that is not a tenai bezin. Ultimately, again, a kinyan will work to make it like a binding written transaction. The Gemara says, really? V'chi migra gara? So I don't understand, because something is a tenai bezin, that makes it a weaker transaction than something that one voluntarily commits themselves to. Elabito kevan de tenai bezdin ka'achla, emar tsrari atvisa. I will say, here's the difference. Since one is obligated to support their daughter, both during their lifetime as well as after death, right, as a result of tenai bezdin, there's a concern that perhaps the father already gave his daughter money during her lifetime to put away in the event of his death. Right, she has that money. So because there's a concern that she has that money, we will not allow her to collect from nechasim mishubadim. We're not allowed her to collect from encumbered property or from sold property, only from nechasim and nechorin. We don't really have that same concern with one's wife's daughter, right? If Reuven agreed to support Rachel's daughter, ultimately, we don't really feel that it's so shayach that he gave her money during his lifetime to put away for her support. Okay, so therefore, again, that's a tenai bezin, and therefore she is like a creditor and could even collect from the chasim mishubadim. So again, where are we holding over here? We're still, again, we're still focusing on our primary halacha that Shimon, when the property is taken from him, back to the Mishnah's case, property when Shimon is taken from him, ultimately, again, by the true owner of the property, he goes back to Reuven, dual claim, one for the purchase price, one for peros and improvements. For the purchase price, the Mishnah says, he could collect from the chasim mishubadim, for peros and improvements, only from the chasim b'nei chorin. Why that distinction? Still the machlokes, Ula and Rabbi Chanina. Ula says, because peros and improvements are not written, purchase price is written. Rabbi Chanina, purchase price is defined, peros and improvements are not. I will say now we just picked up an interesting nugget of information along the way, that a fascinating distinction between a voluntary obligation to support the daughter of your wife, that daughter essentially becomes like a creditor. So therefore, again, upon death or divorce, if the obligation of support is still upon the estate, that girl could collect even from the chasim mishubadim. Whereas your own daughters, who you are obligated to support even after death as a result of tenai bezdin, could only collect from the chasim b'nei chorin, not from the chasim mishubadim. Okay, fascinating. Let's go back there. Tashma, I'm Rabbi Nasan, Emasai. Emasai, Shabbosai, in other words, when do we say, Emasai, when do we say that halacha l'maisa, you cannot collect for peros and for improvements from the chasim mishubadim, bizman shekadam mikro shalsheni l'shvach al shalrishon. Shabbosai is fascinating. That's only true when the subsequent sales, right? Shabbosai, so remember again, going back to our case, Reuven sold property to Shimon. It turns out that while the property was stolen, so now halacha l'maisa, the real owner of the property comes to Shimon, extracts it from him. Shimon comes back to Reuven, says, "Reuven, make me whole." So, what does the Mishnah say? For purchase price of the property, you could collect from the chasim mishubadim. but for peros and improvements, only from nechasim v'nechor. We're not qualifying that statement. When is that true? That's only true in the subsequent property sales of Reuven, right? Bizman shekadmo mechol shoshen l'shvach al sharishon. Only when the subsequent property sales that Reuven made to other purchasers took place before Shimon improved his land. But if ultimately, again, Shimon improved his land, right? Improved the land before Reuven subsequently sold other properties, Shimon would have the ability to collect from the Chasam Mishubadim even for peros and improvements. What do you see from here? Alma mishum delo kadim hu. So I'll say, it sounds like from here that it's an issue of chronology and not anything else. To which the Gemara says, you're right. The truth is, this whole thing, tanaihi. This whole thing is a machlokes tanaihi. We'll say, watch this. Disanya. Emot siyan achilas peros l'shavach hakos l'mazen yishavah abanos min nechasim mishubadim mibnei tikuna olam lefi she'en ksuvin. Shabbos said, now watch this. The Brisa just lumped a whole bunch of stuff. You cannot extract from nechasim mishubadim, right, from sold properties. You cannot extract from nechasim mishubadim, I will say, for what? For peros, produce, shevach karkos, land improvements, mazon aisha, right, support of the wife, vabbanos, and support of the daughters, right? Why? Mipnei tikuna olam, for the benefit of society. Why? Why, I will say? Lefi she'en ksuvin. Because I will say, these all represent monetary obligations that are not written in a document. See, I will say, when a person purchases property, so they like we said, they do their title search. So I will say, what does the title search include, at least during Talmudic times? It includes any, well, I guess still now, it includes any liens against the property. So I will say, the only way for you to know about a lien against property is how? Is how? If it's recorded in a document. Right, if it's recorded, so therefore again the Gemara says for the benefit of society to allow for normative uninterrupted real estate transactions, the only time you could extract from the Chasim Mishubadim is when it's for a debt recorded in a document. But all of these debts, Shavu say again, peros, land improvement, support of a wife, of daughters, these are not included in documents. So because of that, they're not written in that. So because of that, you can only collect from Nechasim B'nei Chor, not Nechasim Mishubadim. Rav Rabbi Yossi, v'chi ma tikuna olam yesh bazeh, v'alo in ketsuvin. So Rabbi Yossi says, what tikuna olam is there? And that, it's because they're not defined, right? Because they're not defined amounts. So Rabbi Yossi, so you see over here that the Machlokes Ula and Rabbi Chanina ultimately, again, is a Machlokes Tanoim. Machlokes Tanoim. Machlokes Tanoim. Fine. So it seems to me that the way that Rambam paskins is, first of all, we'll say, this is how he paskin, halacha l'maisa. So it's actually a very important choshen mishpat halacha, which is, again, one more time, Reuven sold the field to Shimon. It turns out the field, right? And again, during that time that Shimon owned the field, what did he do? He grew produce on it. He improved the field. It turns out the field is stolen. Real owner comes and takes back. Understand? Takes back the field from Shimon. Shimon, I will say, remember, Shimon doesn't have a claim against owner. Who does Shimon have a claim against? Seller. Right? Seller, Reuven. Shimon has a dual claim against Reuven. One more time, what's the dual claim? Part one of the claim is, part one, purchase price. Part two, peros and improvements. The halacha, I will say, is that for purchase price, Shimon has the ability to collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, which means, if Reuven sold off other properties after he sold the stolen property to Shimon, Shimon could claw back other sales that Reuven made in order to go ahead and satisfy his purchase price. But he can't collect from the Chasim Mishubadim for what? Ultimately, again, for peros and improvements. Why not? Why not, Rabbi Say? Because at the end of the day, the Rambam passes Rabbi Chanina, because halacha l'maisa, they're not defined. In other words, this is a very important halacha. The only time you could go ahead and claw back nechasim mishubadim is when you have a defined, known claim, like a purchase price. Right? It is clear that Shimon paid $50,000 for the parcel of land. So other claims, like peros and capital improvements, which are not defined, which are not defined amounts, not quantified amounts, as at the time of the previous transactions, cannot be clawed back from the Chasim Mishubadim. I will say, again, does Shimon still have a claim against Reuven for peros and improvements? Does he have a claim? Of course. But who is the claim against? Who is the claim against? Reuven himself. Right? Shimon can't go after any other purchasers to satisfy that claim. That is Dalach Rabosa. Incredible. Let's go back there. Vamotzi Mitzilo Yishar. Rabosa, it's the last part of the Mishnah. This is really quite fascinating. We'll say, this is a fascinating Halacha. We'll say, if you go ahead, remember, what was the case of the Mishnah? Case of the Mishnah was, right, Reuben's walking on the street. He finds Shimon's wallet. He goes to Shimon and says, Shimon, good news, I found your wallet. Here's your wallet. Right? Right? He opens it up. And Shimon says, there's only $100 in here. Right? There was really $200 in there. So take an oath that you did not keep any of that money for yourself. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Mishnah says, whenever you return a lost object, you're never obligated to take an oath. Why? We'll say, this is self-evident. Why? Why? Because if you have to take an oath when you return a lost object, what's going to happen? They're going to say, no, thank you. As well say, cloud gadol in life is, and this is really important, people are willing to do the right thing as long as it's easy. This is important. If it's difficult to do the right thing, I'm not going to do it. Chances are people are not going to do it. If it's easy, I'm happy to do the right thing. I'll say it's a good din in human nature. We're good, and we're willing to help, and we're willing to do. What I'm not willing to do is get into something complicated. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, listen to this. Shnei kisim kshurin. So we'll listen to this. If Reuven says, right, so I'm sorry, I return a bag of money, right? And right, Reuven returns a bag of money. And Shimon says, by the way, there are two bags of money tied to each other. So Shimon says there are two bags of money. Reuven says it only found one. So what's the halacha? Nishba. Ultimately, again, Reuven has to take an oath that he did not find the other bag of money. Shnei shvan kshurim matzasili. So right, ultimately, again, so what happens? So again, Reuven returns an ox. And Shimon says, there are two oxen tied to each other. And Reuven says, I only found one. Eino nishba. So ultimately, again, Reuven doesn't have to swear. What's the distinction between these cases? My taima, shvar menaschim adadi, kislo menaschim adadi. It is common for oxen that are tied to each other to what? To separate. Money bags don't separate. So the Gemara says, shnei shvar kshur matzasa. Bala omer matzasi vechzarti lacha echad mehen harizen nishba. Also, listen to this case. What happens if, right, Shimon goes ahead and, I'm sorry, Reuben returns an ox. And Shimon says, well, I had two oxen tied to each other. And Reuben says, yeah, I know. I already returned the other one beforehand. So here I will say, in this case, what's happening? So in this case, Reuben is admitting that he found two oxen. What he's claiming is he returns one earlier and one now. So I will say, what is this a case of? This is a case of Modu Miktsas. Harei Zenishba. So Reuben says, one second. Let's take a step back over here. Rabbi Yitzchak, Lesley Hamotzi Mitzia Lo Yisham Neitikon Olam. We'll say, these are all cases of a person returning a lost object. And yet, we'll say, some of these cases, we're saying that the finder has to take an oath. But doesn't Rabbi Yitzchak subscribe to the principle in the Mishnah that when it comes to returning a lost object, you're not obligated to take an oath? Didn't we say that? To which the Gemara says, Amud Beis, Hu da Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So we'll say, Rabbi Yitzchak himself holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. What does Rabbi Yaakov say? The sign Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Sometimes a person will swear as a result of their own claim, of their own admission. Ketzad, for example, mana la'avicha biyadi ve'achaltiv pras. So I will say, for example, Reuven says to Shimon, I have a mana that was owed to your father, right, who passed away. I paid back half to your father. Let me pay the rest of it to you. Harei zen nishba. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, Reuven is going to have to now swear about the first half that he supposedly went ahead and paid. Now we'll say, now take a look at Rashi just a moment. Who's over comes from Yaakov? Dehecha dekatavi lebetainas bari, lo chashiv le meshiv aveda. So altainas atzmo, hashto mashma shein adam tova ula kamam first. So we'll say, now listen to this. So Rabbi Lazar is of the opinion of Osai that halacha lemaisa. Halacha lemaisa, sometimes when a person makes a definitive claim, ultimately, again, they're going to be forced to swear based on their own claim. So now the Gemara says as follows. Here's the case, right? Reuven says to Shimon, so mana la'avicha biyadi, right? Your father lent me $1,000, and I repaid him $500 during his lifetime. Here's the other 500. Hareze Nishbas. And now Reuven has to swear that he indeed returned the first 500. So Vizel Nishba Kainas Atzmo. This is a case where Reuven is going to have. Now, both say, now remember, what's intriguing about this case? What's intriguing about this case? So Shimon made no claim here. Right? Reuven is the one advancing the information. Reuven is the one telling Shimon, Shimon, your father lent me $1,000. Here's, I paid him back 500. Here's the other 500. Shimon never made a claim against Reuven. The Chacham say, Eino elikimei sheva veid de'upater. The Chacham also say in this case, that this is the equivalent of returning a lost object, and therefore, again, Reuven doesn't have to take it off. They're both saying, now, why is this case the equivalent of returning a lost object? Why? Because they're both saying, Shimon had no knowledge of this. Shimon had no knowledge of this, right? Shimon's not making a claim. As far as Shimon knows, his father never lent money to anyone. So when Reuven comes along and tells Shimon about the existence of this debt and says, I paid back 500, and there's 500 remaining, it's as if Reuven is returning a lost object, right? No one knew about this beforehand. And therefore, again, I will say, what's the halacha with Mei Shiva Veda? What's the halacha when you return a lost object? You're not Chai B'Shvua. Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov, Lesle Mei Shiva Veda Pater. Does Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov not subscribe to the concept that when you return a lost object, you are not obligated in Shvua? So I will say, Amarav B'Tar No Katan. No, no, what's the case over here? The case of Osai is where Reuven, where again, Shimon is claiming it, right? Shimon is claiming the money, but Shimon is a katan. Okay, so Gemara says, katan, midi meshasha isbe, does the claim of a katan have any halachic validity? That's none we learned. Ein nishba'an al tainas cheresh shotev a katan. But we've learned that halacha lemais, in general, you don't take a shvua on the taina of a cheresh shotev and a katan. To which the Gemara says, no. My katan, what's a katan in this case, Rabbi Osai? Gadol. What's a katan? A katan is a gadol. Okay. Rabbi Osai says, if a katan is a gadol, so va'amai karile katan, so why are you calling him a katan? Dilegabe mili da'aviv katanu. Rabbi Osai, we saw this phrase 2 days ago. That when it comes to the dealings of his father, ultimately, again, he is a katan. Right? When it comes to the dealings of his father, ultimately, again, he's called the katan. So now let's go through this. Now, really what the case is as follows. The case, so I'll say, we thought this was a case of Reuven says to Shimon, Shimon, listen, I want to tell you, your father lent me $1,000. I paid him back $500. I owe him another $500. Here it is. And what's Shimon's response to this? Okay, you know, fine. I never knew about it beforehand. Now, the boss is saying, that's not the case. What's the case? The case is where Shimon is claiming against Reuven. Reuven, my father lent you $1,000. And Reuven is saying, yeah, you're right. I paid him back 500. Here's the other 500. And the Gemara is saying that this is a case of where Reuven is being claimed, so to speak, by a katan. So why? But he's not a katan. I'm sorry, but Shimon's a gadol. Why are we calling Shimon a katan? Because when it comes to the matters, when it comes to the dealings of his father, ultimately, again, he is a katan. To which the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, ihachi tainis aswa tainis acheremu. So we'll say, so this is not a case. This is not a case where Reuven is admitting this of his own volition, right? Reuven is being claimed, right? This is a claim being made against Reuven by Shimon. There's a claimant, right? There's a claimant. To which the Gemara says, this is a case of tainis acheremu v'odas atzmo. So this is a case ultimately again where Reuven is being claimed, right? Reuven, right? I don't know if that's the right word, right? Reuven is being claimed by Shimon, and Reuven is admitting half of the claim. So this is a paradigmatic case of what? Modi b'miktas, to which the Gemara says, Tanas Acher, Modas Atzmo, Kula Tanas and Nami Tanas Acher, Modas Atzmo, Nenu Ela, B'Dirabba Kamiflagi. Rather, Rabbah say, ultimately again, they're arguing in the statement of Rabbah. What does Rabbah say? Da'ama Rabbah. Why is it in general that by modem mixas? So we have this concept, right? So let's say, for example, in this case over here, right? So Reuven, a classic case of modem mixas, right? Shimon goes over to Reuven. Shimon says, Reuven, you owe me $1,000. Reuven says, I only owe you 500. So what's the halacha, Bosai? Modim mitzvahs, right? The halacha ultimately is that now, again, since there was a partial admission, so Reuven has to swear on the rest of the claim. So what's the reason for that, Bosai? What's the logic? Bosai, actually, we're going to stop over here for today. We'll pick up, and I'm leaving a little bit of a cliff. Ooh, it's a long daf tomorrow. Okay, so I'll say, all right, well, Amir Tesham, we'll be all right. We'll be all right. So I'll say, we'll pick up, because I don't want to rush through modim mitzvahs. So I'll say, we'll finish up modim mitzvahs and Amir Tesham tomorrow. And I will say, and then we'll see the halacha lemaisa. Again, there's going to be a very interesting halacha lemaisa piece on this idea about whether or not you're obligated to swear in a case, ultimately, when you return a lost object. Are there circumstances you do? Are there circumstances you don't? Finish the motive that makes us. Finish, ultimately, again, Mishav Avedim, tomorrow, Bosai, Shkoyach. Yeah.